Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, April 2nd, 2024. I'm your reader, Bill Petrosky. In area news headlines, Grammy-nominated country artist to headline Dubuque show. A Grammy-nominated country artist with 11 chart-topping hits will headline a concert this summer at Dubuque Casino with an American Idol winner performing in support. Billy Currington will perform June 28th at Backwater Stage at Q Casino Plus Resort, according to a press release. Chase Beckham and Mackenzie Carpenter will perform and support. Gates will open at 5:30 p.m. with performances beginning at 7. Tickets are $49.50 and $69.50 and will be available beginning at 10 a.m. Friday, April 5th. Tickets can be purchased at online at BackwaterStage.com or at guest services within the casino. Love That Lasts, New Van, a couple dances through 54 years of wedded bliss. Story by Michelle London, michellelondon.london at thmedia.com. Dateline, New Van, Iowa. Dennis Willenborg remembers how he first learned to dance. My mother, Mary, taught me, said Dennis, now 78. Growing up on a farm in Petersburg, he would help his mother with evening chores, milking cows and feeding the hogs. We'd go to the barn to milk the cows, and she would play music, he said. She just loved music, and she would teach me to dance. That's how I learned a polka. After attending Bayless Business College in Dubuque, Dennis worked as a bookkeeper for Brunken Implement Company in Dyersville. On the weekends, he and his buddies would make the rounds of dances in the area. One of his favorite dance spots was the Dubuque County Fairgrounds. At one of those dances in September 1969, he met Carol Ann Vasky, now Willenborg, who was working at Montgomery Ward and living in Dubuque with her widowed mother. She and a group of girlfriends also enjoyed attending local dances. My sister danced with a friend of his, and they took us home after the dance, said Carol Ann, now 79. Dennis, who was driving with Carol Ann in the front seat, admits he was a bit uncomfortable riding with a stranger in the passenger seat. So I thought we should get to know each other, he said. We just talked, and then we meet up again at dances. They soon became a couple, and it wasn't long before talk of them getting married began to circulate in their social group. Sitting in his car one evening, Dennis broached the subject with Carol Ann. He said, "Everybody thinks we're going to get married. Do you think we should?" Carol Ann said. So that's how he popped the question. Dennis and Carol Ann got married just 7 months after they met on April 11, 1970 at the Church of the Nativity in Dubuque. "Oh, everybody talked about it," Carol Ann said. "They all thought I was pregnant. Dennis even had a neighbor that marked the date on the calendar to see if I was going to have a baby before 9 months was up. She would do that for all the couples she knew that got married." Their oldest daughter, Christine Rolfs, was born more than 9 months later, and they went on to have 3 more children after Christine. Ron, Andy, Kathy Wilhelm. They also have 9 grandchildren and 12 great-grandchildren. After a honeymoon in Nashville, Tennessee, where the highlight of it was a trip to the Grand Ole Opry, Dennis and Carol Ann moved to a farm his father had bought that bordered the family farm. Dennis started a new job as an accountant at Ertle Company in Dyersville. Carol Ann, who then was working in the office at Dubuque Packing Company, left her job to help on the farm. Dennis's mother, Mary, sold the cows on the farm before he and Carol Ann got married, knowing that the added burden of working off the farm and coming home to farm chores would take time away from the newlywed couple. She said she was not going to make her son work days and then come home and do all those chores at night, Carol Ann said. She was the sweetest lady you ever knew. Once her children was born, Dennis and Carol Ann moved to a property with some acreage on the edge of New Vienna. It has been their home for 40 years. Christine of Piasta remembers the vegetable stand she and her siblings had each summer at the end of their driveway. "We sold carrots, beans, tomatoes, corn," she said, "and it was all fresh picked by us each morning. It was something we did every day during most of the summer." Christine said that work ethic came from her parents. They just always worked hard, she said, and they loved to polka. They go to dances all the time when they weren't working. While still at Ertle, Dennis partners with Alpine Plant Food, a Canada-based fertilizer company, and launched Willenborg Ag Service. Dennis left Ertle in 1997 after 24 years and went to Modern Fold in Dyersville, where he worked until 2011. He continued to run Willenborg Ag until that time as well. Founded in 1974, the ag business is now run by their son, Andy, though Dennis said he hasn't fully retired. "I help him out when he asks," he said. Carol Ann turned her hobby of painting custom cement lawn ornaments into a thriving business, Willenborg Log Lawn Ornaments, which she sold in 2019 after more than 30 years of sending her creations all over the United States into several other countries. That started out as just a hobby in the basement, Christine said, but Mom and Dad really supported each other. They say, you want to do something? I'll help you do it. That's just how they always were. Christine has fond memories of accompanying her father on fertilizer deliveries and attributes those trips to her coffee-drinking habit. My brothers and sister and I would take turns going with him, she said. He wouldn't have anything in the truck to drink except coffee. So that's how that started. Until a few years ago, Dennis and Carol Ann enjoyed cutting a rug anywhere they could find a dance. Health issues have forced them to slow down a bit, but Carol Ann still gets together with a group of girlfriends who would spend their weekends at the local shindigs decades ago. We still meet once a month in Dubuque, she said. There are 8 of us, and we still like getting together when we can. Carol Ann leads tours at Heritage House Museum in Nevada, and they both enjoy the occasional night out for pizza at their favorite restaurant, Joe's Pizza in Guttenberg. As members of St. Boniface Catholic Church in Nevada faced this important part of their lives. Carol Ann said it was Dennis's gentle nature that first attracted her. It was just feeling, she said. He was gentle. He wasn't a big mouth. He wasn't a boozer. He's so tender-hearted. And we just clicked. Dennis said he was pretty sure Carol Ann was the one for him right after that 3-mile ride home from the dance where they met. You can get to know a person pretty well in a few miles, he said. And I knew we had a friendship right away. We had common interests, and we for sure had dancing. Do you know a long-married couple? Love That Lasts is a series highlighting local couples who have been married for at least 50 years. To nominate a couple to be featured in the series, contact reporter Michelle London at 563-588-5655, or you can email her at michelle.london@thmedia.com. Be sure to include the couple's names, city of residence, contact information, how long the two have been married, and their wedding date. Cascade Library to host free gardening event. Dateline Cascade, Iowa. Cascade Public Library will host a free gardening program this week. Gardening Made Easy, Fun, Affordable will be held from 6 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, April 3rd at the library, 301 First Avenue West, according to an online announcement. The event is held in conjunction with Dubuque County Master Gardeners. Free seedlings will be provided. Iowa Legislature begins tax spending plans in earnest in final weeks of session. Story by Benjamin Fisher, benjamin.fisher@thmedia.com. Now that the Iowa Legislature has set per pupil spending, school funding, lawmakers begin working on taxation spending plans to wrap up the 2024 legislative session. Area Iowa lawmakers in the Senate and House of Representatives Republican majorities recently told the Telegraph Herald the legislature is unable to truly begin tax spending discussions until per pupil student aid to school districts was set. We have to wait until we get a target number for the state budget, Iowa Representative Shannon Lundgren told the TH in Des Moines. The work kind of starts on the list of priorities that budget subcommittees would want to make sure we fund. We end up having a conversation about, here's what the state revenue estimating conference said. Here's what we can spend. Here's the part that we keep aside because we don't spend 100% because the REC can be wrong. Public education spending is more than half of the state's budget because Republican Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds and Iowa Senate leadership insisted on supplemental state aid being bound to their planned overhaul of the state's area education agencies and increases to minimum teacher pay setting per pupil aid when several weeks past its deadline. Because of that and all the new money, $380 million that entailed, the education spending side backed up Ways and Means, which backed up any other appropriation talks, said Iowa Senator Kerry Kulker R. Dyersville, an assistant Senate Majority Leader who serves on both the Senate Appropriations and Senate and Ways and Means Committees, in an interview Saturday. So I would say that the budget chairs, Ways and Means Committees, and Appropriations Committees will be throttling down from here on out. We have Senate appropriations twice this week, and I have a budget subcommittee meeting on Monday. Republican lawmakers said before the session began they intended to accelerate the phasing in of income tax cuts to a 3.9% flat rate that was passed during the 2022 session. While different related proposals have been floated this session, no solid plan has advanced yet. Kulker said consideration of that idea would begin soon, but with no certain completion. At the end of the day, with the last tax bills we did, Iowans are going to still see income tax relief no matter what, she said. It's the tax credits and all the additional stuff we were trying to get done this year that we have now to figure out. If not an acceleration, we'll work that out in the interim for the next year. Some tax work has already begun, even while the school aid worked its way through the legislature. The House Ways and Means Committee last week advanced a bill to establish a competitive fund for tax credits to be awarded to small businesses. Investors or fund managers would be able to award $9 million in tax credits annually to businesses outside of the state's 12 most populous counties if they have 200 or fewer employees and submit project proposals to grow jobs. After years of hard work, a land bank proposal long pushed by Iowa Senator Pam Yoakum Dedebuke advanced from the Senate Ways and Means Committee last week. It would allow local governments and nonprofits to form agreements to acquire dilapidated property for development. It's a wonderful public-private partnership that will begin to address affordable housing in our state, Yoakum said in the committee meeting, where she serves as a ranking Democrat. Senate Committee Chair Dan Dawson, our Council Bluffs, said the bill will be, quote, another tool in the toolbox for local governments if passed. A county might have a redevelopment office, or a city might, he said. This allows that any of those entities or a nonprofit have a way to come together toward that goal. The House also recently passed a bill to allow Iowa breweries and distilleries to export or import goods with states that also allow for exportation to Iowa. People pass through Gyrosville and stop at Textile Brewing Company and love something that Textile made but is not distributed nationally, Lundgren said at the Capitol. This allows Textile to ship directly to that person in another state, as long as that state has a reciprocal with Iowa. They have to allow direct shipping back. Republicans in the House also released budget plans last week. House Republicans proposed an $89.55 billion budget for the coming fiscal year. That's $8.955 billion budget for the coming fiscal year. That's $404 million more than the current fiscal year, with the biggest increases in health and human services and justice system. House Democrats accused Republicans of leaving the public in the dark as to how the budget would be spent. Culker said Senate Republicans did not yet have set budget numbers, but that they again would intend to be conservative. Police say a woman threw knife at man during Dubuque disturbance. Police said traffic camera footage shows a woman throwing a knife at a man during a disturbance in Dubuque. China R. Nelson, 23 of 37, West 15th Street, number 1, was arrested at 9:13 p.m. Sunday at a residence on a charge of domestic assault while displaying a weapon. Court documents state that police originally responded at approximately 7 p.m. Sunday to Nelson's residence for a report of a disturbance. After taking statements from Nelson and her ex-boyfriend, Austin L. Jones, 28, police reviewed traffic camera footage from the area. Footage shows Jones running out of the front door of the residence at 6:52 p.m., with Nelson emerging from the front doorway and throwing a kitchen steak knife at him, documents state. Nelson ducked, and the knife landed in the street. Jones then picked up the knife and tossed it into the grass. Nelson and Jones could be seen arguing, and Nelson threw what appeared to be a small board at him, documents state. Area man sentenced to probation after dog dies of neglect. An area man has been sentenced to 2 years of probation in an animal neglect case. Fabian E. Swank, 30 of Maquoketa, recently received a sentence from Iowa District Court Associate Judge Robert Richter in Dubuque County after pleading guilty to a charge of animal neglect resulting in death. As part of his probation, he is not allowed to own any pets. Swank was charged with neglect after court documents state his dog was found tied up next to an empty tent at Swiss Valley Park Campground on August 23rd. The dog was taken to a veterinary office where it later died, documents state. Swank was located and told authorities he had tied the dog up next to his tent but left the animal unattended for about 4 hours while he traveled to Dubuque to do his laundry, documents state. Dubuque tied a daily heat record that day with a temperature of 97 degrees, according to the National Weather Service. The peak heat index was 118 degrees. Here's a look at local law enforcement reports. The Dubuque Police and Dubuque County Sheriff's Departments reported the following. Corlandis D. Chester, 36 of 2826, Jackson Street, was arrested at 10:59 p.m. Sunday at his residence on charges of assault with injury, interference with official acts, public intoxication, and providing false information. Austin M. Bloom, 31 of 2215 Woodlawn Street, was arrested at 9:47 p.m. Sunday at his residence on charges of second offense operating while intoxicated, child endangerment, and interference with official acts causing injury. Court documents state that a Dubuque County Sheriff's Department deputy suffered a minor injury while Bloom was taken into custody. Michael A. Burdunis, 29 of 22361 and 1/2 Central Avenue, was arrested at 3:58 p.m. Sunday in the 100 block of East 15th Street under charge of domestic assault strangulation. Lori A. Bolsinger, 60, no permanent address, was arrested at 3:15 p.m. Sunday at Dubuque Law Enforcement Center on charges of possession of methamphetamine, unlawful possession of a prescription drug, and possession of drug paraphernalia. Ninth annual event to highlight African culture, April 13th in Dubuque. An annual Dubuque event will highlight African culture. The ninth annual Celebrate Africa and the Diaspora event will be held from noon to 3 p.m. April 13th at Dubuque's Multicultural Family Center, 1157 Central Avenue, according to a press release. The free event will feature music, dancing, educational displays, a fashion show, resource booths, and a sampling of African food prepared by Obahapa's Kitchen of Chicago. This cuisine is rooted in Ghana. The event is a collaboration between the Center, University of Dubuque, Clark University, and Loras College. Visit mfcdbq.org for more information. BizBuzz River Bluff Collective opening Dubuque space. Cassville Coffee Shop opens. Art Gallery Bed and Breakfast debuts in Maquoketa. This column is by Nick Juice, nick.juice at thmedia.com. BizBuzz shares business tidbits from across the tri-states. This edition highlights developments in Dubuque, Cassville, Wisconsin, and Maquoketa, Iowa. A well-known local cannabis business is opening a retail space and lounge in Dubuque's historic Millwork District. The grand opening for River Bluff Collective Retail Store and Lounge is slated for this weekend. The business offers the consumable and topical cannabis and plant-infused products River Bluff already is known for, along with a few additions, while also providing a space for people to partake in them. River Bluff purchased the Magnolia Building that was formerly home to Bread and Vine, Dubuque, the Driftless Social Club, and other entities. Inside is the retail and lounge space, as well as River Bluff corporate offices, distribution center, and production kitchen. When this building came up for sale, we just had to have it, said Ellie Gansimer, who along with her brothers, DJ and Joe Leffelholz, and Josh McGinnis, owns the company. We knew that we wanted to open in Iowa, but it was a matter of finding the right building. The new lounge space will provide sitting areas for people to socialize and consume River Bluff's various products. Among the offerings will be THC-infused cocktails created by on-site mixologists and a new THC-infused Bluff THC soda pop, which is made in partnership with Seven Hills Brewing Company. The soda pop includes Delta 9 hemp-derived THC and flavors including grape, lime, and punch, and are compliant with Iowa's laws for per container THC dosage. The interior of the space follows River Bluff's green theme. That color scheme extends to a full-size motorcycle bolted to the wall above the bar, a remnant from the property's previous residence that now too is green. There is still some decorating, but most of this was beautiful when we walked in, Gansmer said. The business's grand opening celebration will span 3 days, April 5 through April 7. As a promotion, the first 15 people through the door on all 3 days will receive free River Bluff merchandise, Gansmer said. This type of business has been in our head for 4 years, Gansmer said. THC is medically helpful. It's versatile. It's recreational helpful. River Bluff Collective's new retail and lounge space is open 7 a.m., 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. Sunday through Thursday, and from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Friday and Saturday. For more information, visit riverbluffcollective.com. Or search for the business on Facebook. Cassville couple opens coffee shop. Ron and Rachel Shergan believe they needed a new lease on life. Living in the Chicagoland area while raising 3 kids, the couple decided a slower lifestyle in a small town fit them better. So about a year ago, the Shergans moved to Cassville. Last month, they opened Driftless Coffee Company downtown at 101 West Amelia Street. We jumped in headfirst, said Rachel Shergan. This focus is on small-town vibes, strong customer service experiences, and craft drinks. Driftless offers coffee, cold brew, and artisan teas along with a breakfast and lunch menu. Coffee is great, but we also have a passion for tea, Sherman said. We want to expose people to various tea flavors, and I think we have been successful so far in that. Meat lover or veggie quiche is included on the breakfast menu alongside avocado toast and a variety of bakery items. Lunch options include salads, sandwiches, and a soup of the day. The Sherman said a signature just so far has been to take on a classic Reuben sandwich called the Rachel. It's topped with turkey coleslaw, Swiss cheese, and a house dressing that will remind consumers of both the Russian and Thousand Island dressing, Sherman said. Our food leans towards healthy options that are grab-and-go and relatively easy for people to order takeout, Sherman said. Driftless Coffee Company is open from 6 a.m. to 2 p.m. daily. For more information and a menu, visit driftlesscoffeecompany.com or the business's Facebook page. Lifelong Creatives open bed and breakfast in Maquoketa. Through the various business undertakings of Nasser and Patricia Shavarar, there has been a common denominator, art. For the Lifelong Creatives, their newest venture in Maquoketa is no different. The Art Manor Gallery and B&B combines the Shavarar's experience operating a hospitality business with providing space to display their art, for which they have received various accolades over the years. The Italianate Victorian brick home on Maquoketa 2nd Street sits near downtown and offers six comfortable bedrooms decorated with couples' creations. It's a perfect place to have a gallery, Nasser Shavarar said. We love the house. It is a beautiful home. The Shavarar's work has taken them around eastern Iowa, all while continuing to produce their art and creative work, which includes portraits and landscapes by Patrician and abstracts and small-town panoramas by Nasser, including of Iowa towns such as Manchester, Guttenberg, Alcater, and Dyersville. Many of these pieces are on display in the Art Manor, which means Art Manor in Italian. Before starting their most recent adventure in Maquoketa, the Shavarars renovated and then operated Old Brewery Bed and Breakfast in Guttenberg for nearly 20 years. After that, the couple purchased three downtown buildings in Central City and rehabilitated them and turned them into a gift shop and art gallery. Their movements are inspired by their art, which is partially why Maquoketa proved to be their next destination. We came to the Maquoketa Art Experience to show, Patricia said. The town and people are wonderful and very welcoming and friendly. Everyone said we should move here. We wanted to be a part of the artist community here. There's never a dull moment. They have so much to offer in this community. When the home on 2nd Street went up for sale, they knew it was meant for them. All the rooms in the bed and breakfast have queen beds and are themed, Patricia said. One room on the main floor is dubbed the Traveling King's Room and has a whirlpool bathtub. Another room is the Arts Master Room and features a bay window. Yet another room follows a Cinderella theme. Guests are treated to a homemade breakfast menu that varies throughout the stays and includes blueberry waffles, omelets, muffins, French toast, bacon, and other offerings. A grand opening is slated for 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday, April 6th. To book a room at the home, located at 311 South 2nd Street in Maquoketa, call or text 319-551-8343 or email artandgiftcenter@hotmail.com. For more information about the Shavarar's art, visit e-artpro.com. Business tip sought. Do you have an interesting story or idea or a news tip to share about a local business? Ideas can be shared with business reporter Grace Nyland at grace.nyland@thmedia.com or by calling her at 563-588-5647. Children's Garden Party Tea event set for April 14th in Dubuque. A traditional afternoon tea event will be held later this month in Dubuque. Afternoon Tea Children's Garden Party will be held from 1 to 3 p.m. April 14th at Matthias Ham Historic Site, 2241 Lincoln Avenue, according to an online announcement. Herbs and flowers will be available to take home. The cost is $25 for adults and $15 for children. Members of the Butte County Historical Society receive a $5 discount. Visit tinyurl.com/hamhousetea to register. Cascade Library to host free gardening event. Dateline Cascade, Iowa. Cascade Public Library will host a free gardening program this week. Gardening Made Easy, Fun, and Affordable will be held from 6 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, April 3rd at the library, 301 First Avenue West, according to an online announcement. The event is held in conjunction with Dubuque County Master Gardeners. Free seedlings will be provided. Boy Scouts to collect food at four Dyersville locations, Dateline Dyersville, Iowa. Local Boy Scouts will host a food collection drive at four locations in Dyersville. Donations will be collected from 4 to 8 p.m. April 12th and from 8 a.m. to noon April 13th. Donations can be dropped off at Dyersville's Fairway, Dollar Fresh, and Randy's Neighborhood Market stores and in the St. Francis Xavier Elementary School Park. Items in highest demand include peanut butter, jelly, applesauce, canned fruit, coffee, pancake mix, syrup, tuna, canned meat, stuffing mix, hamburger helper, pasta, pasta sauce, macaroni and cheese, potato mixes, shampoo, soaps, toothpaste, toothbrushes, and paper products. Items must be non-perishable and not expired. No glass containers will be accepted. Three Southwest Wisconsin school districts receive grants to support student mental health. Dateline, Hazel Green, Wisconsin. Three local school districts have received grants totaling more than $700,000 to address students' mental health challenges. The Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction recently allocated nearly $12 million in federal funding to local education agencies across the state through the Stronger Connections competitive grant process. Funding is part of the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act signed into law in June 2022. Local school districts receiving funding include Boscobel, $131,000, River Ridge, $299,000, Southwestern Wisconsin School District, $280,000. Fenimore to hold spring cleanup, May 22nd. Dateline Fenimore, Wisconsin. Fenimore will hold a curbside spring cleanup next month. Town and Country Sanitation will conduct curbside pickup of items beginning at 6 a.m. May 22nd, according to an online announcement. Residents should leave materials box or bag for pickup. Furniture should be set at curbside. Prohibited items include tires, batteries, liquids, or chemicals, construction and remodeling debris, yard waste, ashes, hazardous waste, household appliances, microwaves, televisions, and electronic parts. Pork Chop Dinner Fundraiser planned for Midwest Medical Center, Dateline Galena, Illinois. Midwest Medical Center Auxiliary Foundation plans a pork chop dinner to raise funds for the hospital and senior care center. The event will take place from 5 to 7 p.m. April 24th at Galena Elks Lodge, 123 North Main Street in Galena, according to a press release. The cost is $15 and includes a roasted pork chop dinner and a dessert. Tickets are available at the hospital's gift shop, Whispering Willow Gift Shop, or from auxiliary members through April 17th. The release states the proceeds will benefit special projects at both Midwest Medical Center and Midwest Senior Care Center community. Midwest Medical Center Auxiliary is composed of over 100 volunteers and has worked to raise money and sponsor projects with funds of more than $380,000 since 2008, the release states. Bird and small animal swap planned in Maquoketa, Dateline Maquoketa, Iowa. Area residents can swap animals, pet supplies, and other items at an event in Maquoketa this weekend. The Maquoketa Bird and Small Animal Swap will take place from 7 to 11 a.m. Saturday, April 6th at the Jackson County Fairgrounds, 1212 East Quarry Street in Maquoketa, according to an online event announcement. Animals accepted include caged birds, guinea pigs, chicks, goats, mice, rats, hamsters, hedgehogs, and sheep, among others. All animals must comply with State of Iowa regulations. Other accepted items include horse tack and other pet supplies, including feed, plants, and bulbs, baked goods, and arts and craft items. Gates will be open for setup for vendors from 6:30 a.m. Spots will be assigned on the day of the event. Admission is $5 per person for those age 12 and up. For more information, contact Lori at 563-212-9435. Again, let me give that 563-212-9435 or Elise at 563-212-7686. Registration opens soon for Jackson County Summer Camp for Youth. Innovate 120 is hosting the camps for elementary through middle school students in collaboration with teachers from Maquoketa Middle and High Schools. Innovate 120 is an entrepreneurship hub and co-working space in Maquoketa. Registration is required and $25 student participation fee is due the first day of camp. Scholarships are available for those interested. The camp consists of four sessions held in June and July. Visit innovate120.org to register. You are listening to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald on Tuesday, April 2nd, 2024 on IRIS. The the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Beverly V. Brandt, Dateline Galena, Illinois. Beverly V. Brandt, 93 of Galena, Illinois, passed away Tuesday afternoon, March 26, 2024, at Midwest Senior Center. Galena, surrounded by her wonderful and loving family. A funeral service will be held at noon, Thursday, April 4, 2024, at Furlong Funeral Chapel, Galena, where friends may call after 10 a.m. until the time of service. Burial is at Greenwood Cemetery, Galena. She was born November 2, 1930, in Elizabeth, Illinois, the daughter of Benjamin and Carrie Gugler Mesimer. She grew up with four brothers and three sisters on the farm. She married Eldon Brandt July 9, 1949, at Chapville Zion Lutheran Church, and he preceded her in death in 1988. They lived on the Brandt family farm until 1960, when they moved to Galena and raised seven children. She worked at Eaton Corporation in Hanover, Illinois, for 30 years, and she retired in 1995, staying busy helping with many grandchildren. Beverly, a devout churchgoer, was a St. Matthew Lutheran Church member in Galena. In fact, she was the oldest member of the congregation until God called her home. She survived by her seven children and other relatives. She was preceded in death by her parents, husband, and a daughter, Sheila, and grandson Seth Stadler, and great-grandson Jacob Elias, and other relatives. The family would like to thank the Midwest Senior Care Center staff for their excellent care and hospice of Dubuque. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.furlongfuneralchapel.com. Kathleen A. Michelle, Dateline Bellevue, Iowa. Kathy A. Hoffman Michelle, 61 of Bellevue, passed away Saturday, March 30th, 2024, at her home, surrounded by her family following a several-year battle with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, April 3rd, at Hockman-Meyer Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Bellevue, with sharing of memories at 7 p.m. Private family burial will be in St. Joseph's Catholic Cemetery in Bellevue. Kathy was born December 28, 1962, in Dubuque, the daughter of Gerald, Harry, and Mary Donna Murphy Hoffman. She graduated from Duke Senior High School in 1980 and married Edward Rabbit Michael on July 24, 1981. Her pride and joy was her family. She was incredibly proud of her kids and grandchildren. She enjoyed spending time at the beach, drives in the convertible, occasional trips to the casino, shopping, social events, and grandkids' sporting events. Kathy and Ed were foster parents for many years for over 70 children and recently reconnected with three of them. She worked at the Pickle Barrel and then at Dubuque Internal Medicine, Grand River Medical Center for many years before retiring. She will be truly missed by all who knew and loved her. Survivors include her husband, Ed, children, Sarah, Kevin Closer, Stephanie, Jesse Kramer, Phil, Ashley, Barry, Michelle, and Madeline, Michelle, grandchildren, and other relatives. She was preceded in death by her parents, a son, Trevor, a grandson, Clayton, other relatives. A memorial fund has been established in Kathy's memory. Family would like to thank Hospice of Dubuque, Dr. Herman, Grand River Oncology, U of Iowa Hospital and Clinics, especially Dr. Far Kuo, Dr. Silverman, and Nurse Abrams, for your loving care of Kathy throughout the journey. Online condolences may be expressed to the family at www.hockmanfuneralhome.com. Carolyn E. Priebe, Dateline Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin. Carolyn E. Priebe, 83 of Prairie du Chien, died Saturday, March 30th. Visitation will be from 9 to 11 a.m. Friday, April 5 at Thornburg Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service, Prairie du Chien, where a celebration of life service will follow. Eleanor Craggs. Sister Eleanor Craggs, BVM, 101 years old, of Mount Carmel Bluffs, 1160 Carmel Drive, Dubuque, Iowa, died Sunday, March 31. Visitation will be from 9 to 9:30 a.m. Thursday, April 4th, at the Mary Frances Clark Chapel at Mount Carmel Bluffs. Sharing of memories will be at 9:30 a.m., followed immediately by the Mass of Christian Burial. Burial is in the Mount Carmel Cemetery. Sister Eleanor ministered in California for 50 years. She was an elementary teacher in Pasadena and San Jose and a secondary teacher in Glenville and Santa Barbara. She served as vice principal and school development director in Glendale and principal in San Francisco. She also served the congregation as a postulant mistress in Los Gatos, California. She was born on April 22, 1922, in Chicago, to William and Eleanor Bittner Craggs. She entered the BVM congregation September 8, 1943, from St. Jerome Parish, Chicago. She professed final vows in 1946, her first vows in 1946, and final vows 5 years later. She was preceded in death by her parents. She is survived by the Sisters of Charity, BVM, with whom she shared life for 80 years. Memorials may be given to Sisters of Charity, BVM, 1100 Carmel Drive, Dubuque, Iowa, 52003, or online at thebvmsisters.org website/support_donate.cfm. Eagleoff, Siegert, and Casper Funeral Home, 2659 John F. Kennedy Road, Dubuque, Iowa, 52002, is in charge of arrangements. Francis R. Rosemeyer, East Dubuque, Illinois. Francis R. Rosemeyer, 95, of East Dubuque, Illinois, passed away Friday, March 29th, at the Clarissa C. Cook Hospice House, Bettendorf. Family and friends may call from 9:15 to 10:15 a.m. Wednesday, April 3rd, at St. Mary's Church in East Dubuque. Mass of Christian burial will be 10:30 a.m. Wednesday at the church, with Father Dennis Vargas officiating. Burial will follow in the East Dubuque Cemetery. The Miller Funeral Home of East Dubuque is assisting the family. Francis was born April 4, 1928, near Cincinnati, Wisconsin, the son of Frank B. and Lucilla M. Rundy Rosemeyer. He was a graduate of East Dubuque High School, class of 1946. He was united in marriage to Pearl L. Hamilton, August 12, 1950, at St. Mary's Church in Dubuque. He was employed as a salesman for Sieg Dubuque Automotive Company until his retirement. Enjoy the river, boating, fishing, hunting, and family vacations. Surviving is his wife, Pearl, two sons, Ross F. of Davenport and Neil G. of East Dubuque, two grandchildren, Tracy Rosemeyer and Leah Rosemeyer, both of Davenport, and a great-grandson, Parker. He was preceded in death by his parents, a son, Anthony Tony Rosemeyer, daughter-in-law, Susan Tollefson Rosemeyer, six siblings, and two nieces. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.millerfhed.com. Peggy C. Pugh, Dayline, McGregor, Iowa. Peggy C. Pugh, 80, of McGregor, died Wednesday, March 27. Visitation will be from noon to 2 p.m. Saturday, April 6, at Leonard Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Monona, where services will follow. Interment will be at Waterloo Cemetery at a later date. Thornburg Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service of McGregor is assisting the family. Mark A. Murkowsko, Dayline, Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin. Mark A. Murkowsko, 68, of Prairie du Chien, died Saturday, March 30th. There will be no formal services. A celebration of life will be held at a later date. Garrity Funeral Home of Prairie du Chien is assisting the family. Josh W. Miller, Dayline, Bellevue, Iowa. Josh W. Miller, 47, of Bellevue, died Sunday, March 31. Visitation will be from 4 to 8 p.m. Thursday, April 4th. At Hockman Meyer Funeral Home Cremation Service in Bellevue. Services will be at 10:30 a.m. Friday, April 5th, at St. Joseph's Catholic Church in Bellevue. Gordon J. Newman. Gordon J. Newman, 88, of Dubuque, died Monday, March 25th, at Eagle Point Place in Dubuque. He was born September 14th, 1935, in Holy Cross, son of William and Catherine Newman. Gordy, also known as Bud, grew up in a farming community and graduated from Holy Cross Leo in a class of 13 students. He went into the Army from 1955 to 1957, where he was stationed in Seattle, Washington, and he served as the colonel's primary driver and played on the basketball team. After his service, he came home. He had a lot of stories. When he returned from the Army, he met Mary Rosemary Nyland. They wed in 1960, raised three children, and were married for 58 years before she died in 2018. Gordy worked for over 40 years at Dubuque Packing Company in various departments, finishing his career as supervisor before retiring. He went on to drive a school bus for the Dubuque Community School District. He really enjoyed those kids. After retiring from bus driving, he delivered trucks for the McCoy Group and loved to share stories about his time behind the wheel. He was an avid sports fan and played basketball and baseball. He carried the love of sports throughout his life. He spent time with his grandkids on the Mississippi River, teaching them to fish and spend quality time together. He also liked to hunt. While his two daughters didn't seem to get quiet in the woods, his son Kyle picked up his passion and carried on the family tradition. Gordy loved to hear how they did, and would often meet them and his son-in-law after the hunt to help cut up the deer and tell stories. He also had a passion for woodworking. Throughout the years, Gordy and Rosie were involved in a lot of clubs and activities like bowling, and they belonged to the Caseys. They fished, took family vacations every year. Come join us Friday, April 5th for a celebration of life from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Moose Lodge, 2635 Windsor Avenue, and bring a story to help share, to help celebrate Gordy's life. He was preceded in death by his wife, Rosemary. His parents and other relatives left to cherish his memory are his children and grandchildren and other relatives. Family would like to thank Hospice of Dubuque and the staff at Trustwell Living at Eagle Point Care Facility, where the girls treated him like family and brought many smiles to his face. Dad, we are going to miss you until we see you again. The heavens keep the beer cold, and we'll continue the laughter and the stories. Hoffman Steiner Kitchen, Funeral Home, Crematory are in care of the arrangements. A photo tribute can be viewed, and the condolences sent to the family by visiting Gordon's obituary at www.hssfhcares.com. Here's information about area funeral services. Sharon Atherton, Savannah, Illinois, visitation 9 to 11 a.m. Tuesday, April 2nd. Community United Church of Christ, Savannah, service 11 a.m. Tuesday at the church. Thomas J. Bainbridge, Broughton, Wisconsin, visitation 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, April 4th, Casey McNett Funeral Home and Cremation Services, Cuba City, and from 10 to 10:45 a.m. Friday, April 5th, St. Rose of Lima Catholic Church, Cuba City. Mass of Christian Burial, 11 a.m. Friday at the church. Steve Bartman, Sr., Dubuque, visitation, 9 to 9:45 a.m. Tuesday, April 2nd, Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory, 3860 Asbury Road. Service, 10 a.m. Tuesday at the funeral home. Eunice M. Bauer, Savannah, Illinois, visitation, 9 to 10:30 a.m. Saturday, April 6th, Savannah Bible Church. Service, 10:30 a.m. Saturday at the church. Beverly Brandt, Galena, Illinois, service noon Thursday, April 4th, for Long Funeral Chapel, Galena. John P. Brinkman, Cassville, Wisconsin, visitation 9:30 to 11:30 a.m., Wednesday, April 10th, St. Charles Borromeo Catholic Church, Cassville. Mass of Christian Burial, 11:30 a.m., Wednesday at the church. Jerry Brown, Monona, Iowa, visitation 4 to 7 p.m. today, Leonard Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service, Monona, service 11 a.m. Tuesday, April 2nd, St. Paul Lutheran Catholic Lutheran Church, Monona. Pamela J. Burns, Zwingle, Iowa. Wake service 3:45 p.m. Tuesday, April 2nd, Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockville Road, visitation 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday at the funeral home. Mass of Christian Burial, 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, April 3rd. Holy Family Catholic Church, Piasta. Daryl Ernster, Asbury, Iowa. Visitation 9 to 11:15 a.m. Saturday, April 6th. Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory, 3860 Asbury Road. Service 11:30 a.m. Saturday at the funeral home. Patricia Green, Monona, Iowa. Visitation 4 to 6 p.m. Friday, April 5th. Leonard Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service, Monona, and from 10 to 11 a.m. Saturday, April 6th. St. Paul Lutheran Church, Monona. Service 11 a.m. Saturday at the church. Daniel J. Haas, Lancaster, Wisconsin, visitation 9 a.m. to noon, Friday, April 5th. Martin Schwartz Funeral Home Crematory, Lancaster. Arlene R. Henneberry, Cascade, Iowa, Rosary Service, 3:45 p.m. today, Leonard Funeral Home Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road, visitation 4 to 7 p.m. today, and from 9 to 11 a.m. Tuesday, April 2nd at the funeral home. Catherine A. Hocking, Fenimore, Wisconsin, visitation 4 to 7 p.m. today and from 10 to 11 a.m. Tuesday, April 2nd. Lancaster United Methodist Church, service 11 a.m. Tuesday at the church. Myrtle E. Kaiser, Cuba City, Wisconsin, visitation 9 to 11 a.m. Wednesday, April 3rd, Casey Minnett Funeral Home and Cremation Services, Cuba City. Mass of Christian Burial, 11:30 a.m. Wednesday, St. Francis Sales Church, Hazel Green. Jean L. Kernall, Dubuque. Visitation 3 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, April 2nd, Eaglehoff, Siegert, and Casper Funeral Home Crematory, 2659 John F. Kennedy Road. Service 10 a.m. Wednesday, April 3rd, St. Joseph's Catholic Church. Urban J. Monternacht, Cascade, Iowa. Wake service 3:45 p.m. Wednesday, April 3rd, Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road. Visitation 4 to 7 p.m. Wednesday at the funeral home and from 9 to 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, April 4th, St. Matthias Catholic Church, Cascade, Mass of Christian Burial, 10:30 a.m. Thursday at the church. Francis Marshall, Bernard, Iowa. Visitation 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, April 5th at Leonard Funeral Home Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road. Service 10 a.m. Saturday, April 6th at the funeral home. Donald M. Michelle, Bellevue, Iowa, visitation 10 to 11 a.m., Saturday, April 6th, St. Peter St. Paul Catholic Church, Springbrook, service 11 a.m. Saturday at the church. Shirley M. Moody, Dubuque, visitation 4 to 7 p.m., Friday, April 5th, Hoffman Schneider Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory, 3860 Asbury Road. Gordon J. Newman, Dubuque, celebration of life, 1 to 4 p.m., Friday, April 5th, Moose Lodge, 2635 Windsor Avenue. James W. Powers, Dubuque, visitation 1:30 to 4:30 p.m. today, Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road, service 4:30 p.m. today at the funeral home. Kimberly K. Radoff, Luan, Iowa, visitation 9 to 11 a.m. Saturday, April 6th, St. Patrick Catholic Church, Monona, service 11 a.m. Saturday at the church. Bernice Thole, Dyersville, Iowa, visitation 2 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, April 3rd, and from 9 to 10:30 a.m. April 4th, Kramer Funeral Home, Dyersville, Massive Christian Burial, 11 a.m. Thursday, St. Francis Xavier Basilica, Dyersville. Thomas H. Wilkie, Monona, Iowa, visitation 4 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, April 3rd, Leonard Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service, Monona, and from 1 to 2 p.m. Thursday, April 4th, Norway Lutheran Church, St. Olaf. Children's Garden Party Tea Event set for April 14th in Dubuque. A traditional afternoon tea event will be held later this month in Dubuque. Afternoon Tea Children's Garden Party will be held from 1 to 3 p.m. April 14th at Matthias Hamm Historic Site, 2241 Lincoln Avenue, according to an online announcement. Herbs and flowers will be available to take home. The cost is $25 for adults and $15 for children. Members of the Dubuque County Historical Society receive a $5 discount. Visit tinyurl.com/hamhousetea to register. Bellevue man appeals first-degree murder conviction. Dateline Bellevue, Iowa, an area man recently sentenced to life in prison on a murder conviction is appealing the case. Christopher E. Pritchard, 58, of Bellevue, was given mandatory life sentence March 22nd in Iowa District Court of Jackson County after previously being found guilty of first-degree murder and the death of his estranged wife, 55-year-old Angela Pritchard. A jury found Christopher Pritchard guilty February 13th after a seventh-day trial. His attorney, Miguel Puentes, recently filed a notice to the Iowa Supreme Court, appealing the verdict and subsequent sentencing. Online records did not list a reason for the appeal. Angela Pritchard was found dead of an apparent gunshot wound the morning of October 8, 2022, at the Mississippi Ridge Boarding Kennels, the business she operated near Bellevue. Despite a protective order that banned him from contacting his wife, evidence presented at the trial showed Christopher Pritchard went to the kennels about 4 a.m. on that morning, that day, and waited there until Angela Pritchard arrived 3 hours later. Evidence showed the two argued, and Christopher Pritchard shot his estranged wife. At trial, his attorney said the shot was accidental, and he had the gun for coyote hunting, though experts from the Office of State Medical Examiner testified the trajectory of the bullet did not match the version of events. Here's a statewide story from the Associated Press. Migrants in Iowa wonder whether to leave or a bill that could see some arrested deported. A bill in Iowa that would allow the state to arrest and deport some migrants is stoking anxiety among immigrant communities. The story is by Hannah Finger, cut of the AP. Dateline Des Moines. A bill in Iowa that would allow the state to arrest and deport some migrants is stoking anxiety among immigrant communities, leaving some to wonder, should I leave Iowa? The legislation, which is expected to be signed by Governor Kim Reynolds, would make it a state crime for a person to be in Iowa if previously denied admission or to be removed from the United States. It mirrors part of a Texas law that is currently blocked in court. Across Iowa, Latino and immigrant community groups are organizing informational meetings and materials to try to answer people's questions. They're also asking local and county law enforcement agencies for official statements as well as face-to-face meetings. As 80 people were gathered in the Des Moines Public Library community room last week, community organizer Fabiola Schurmeister pulled written questions out of a tin can. In Spanish, one asked, is it safe to call the police? Another asked, can Iowa police ask me about my immigration status? And what happens if I'm racially profiled? Erica Johnson, executive director of Iowa Migrant Movement for Justice, the organization hosting the meeting, sighed when one person asked, should I leave Iowa? Entiendo el sentido, she said. I understand the sentiment. Schermeister, who hosts a local Spanish language radio show, explained how long organizers have worked to build a bridge with law enforcement. It's going to hurt the trust between local enforcement, pro-immigrant organizations, and the immigrant community, she said. Des Moines Police Chief Dana Wingert told the Associated Press in an email that immigration status does not factor into the department's work to keep the community safe, and he said it would be, quote, disingenuous and contradictory to incorporate it at the same time law enforcement has been working to eliminate such bias. I'm not interested, nor are we equipped, funded, or staffed to take on additional responsibilities that have historically never been a function of local law enforcement, he added. In Iowa and across the country, Republican leaders have rallied around the refrain that every state is a border state, as he accused President Joe Biden of neglecting his responsibility to enforce federal immigration laws. That's led Republican governors to send troops to support Texas Governor Greg Abbott's Operation Lone Star and legislatures to propose a variety of state-level strategies. Iowa lawmakers advanced a measure to address what one lawmaker called a, quote, clear and present danger posed to Iowans by some migrants crossing the border. Republican Representative Steve Holt acknowledged questions of constitutionality around the bill, but he ultimately argued that Iowa, quote, has the right, the duty, and the moral obligation to act to protect our citizens and our sovereignty. If we end up in court battle with the federal government, should this pass, bring it on, Holt said during a subcommittee meeting in February. I think it's time for every state to stand up and say, we've had enough. We will defend our people. The Texas law is called stalled in court after a challenge from the U.S. Department of Justice, which says it conflicts with federal government's immigration authority. The department did not immediately comment on the Iowa bill. The Iowa legislation, like the Texas law, could mean criminal charges for people of outstanding deportation orders or have previously been removed from or denied admission to the U.S. Once in custody, migrants could either agree to a judge's order to leave the U.S. or to be prosecuted. The judge's order must identify a transportation method for leaving the U.S. and a law enforcement officer or Iowa agency to monitor migrants' departures. Those who don't leave could face rearrest under more serious charges. The Iowa bill faces the same questions of implementation enforcement as Texas's law, since deportation is a, quote, complicated, expensive, and often dangerous, end quote, federal process, said immigration law expert Hugh Yin Pham of Texas A&M School of Law. Quote, how are Iowa law enforcement agencies going to determine if someone has entered Iowa in violation of an immigration order, Pham asked. She said questions remain about which country a detained person would be sent back to, how they could get there, and how agencies would communicate with those countries. Deportations are a binational business, she said, process, she said, meaning the federal government negotiates with governments of other countries. The disjointed immigration policy, state by state, could threaten those international relationships, he said. Mexico has already said it would reject any state or local government enforcement of immigration laws. The Iowa State Patrol, as well as representatives of multiple police departments and the county sheriff's offices across the state, declined to comment on the bill before it is signed into law. Sean Ireland, president of the Iowa State Sheriffs and Deputies Association and a deputy sheriff in Linn County, said in an email that Iowa law enforcement officials would consult with county attorneys for guidance if the bill becomes law. But Ireland added that community police relations are a priority and law enforcement's focus is, quote, not on looking for people who came to this country illegally and are not committing crimes. Manny Galvez of the Escucha Mi Voz, Hear My Voice community group based in the rural city of West Liberty said the bill has galvanized immigrant communities, including some in the harder-to-reach areas of Iowa, to send the message that immigration is a human issue and that the state's meatpacking plants, cornfields, and construction projects rely on immigrant labor. And that does it for today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, April 2nd, 2024. I'm your reader, Bill Petrosky. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thank you for listening.